That's weird. I sit in the other chair, I'm higher.
Let me say something. Is it yellow?
Hi.
Good morning. Meryl, did you get a haircut since last night?
No, I cut my hair like a few days ago. But I used curl stuff in it this morning, so it looks shorter.
It's cute. Cool. I like it.
Thank you. I like it too.
I was like, I've seen you this week. I didn't remember that.
Yeah. If I just brush it and let it dry naturally, it's a little longer. But if I use product, then it, yeah.
Yeah. I understand that.
No product discussion.
Yes.
How's everybody this morning?
Good morning.
Doing okay.
Did a senior run this morning and joined to pick up some medicine and get some stuff. So.
Okay.
It's amazing how much prices of food have gone up.
And how much more we're eating because we're home all the time, at least in my house.
But about like what I've noticed though is even with that, it's still so much less because I'm not like running out three times a week to like grab something because it's late or at lunch or whatever. It's amazing. Good morning.
Morning.
Carol, how are you?
I'm still here. Still hurting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so am I. I'm waiting for some test results. So.
Anybody learn anything like new this week? Not like a new skill, like just something like you went, oh, I didn't know that before. Just curious. Learn something new, hear something new.
I read an article that talked about that said that Hamilton may have actually been Jewish, possibly, that yeah. His mother may have converted to Judaism to marry a very religious Jewish man and on Nevis where he grew up, and that if she had in fact converted, then when Alexander born, he would have been considered Jewish, and that they think he attended a Jewish day school. That was something that I didn't know.
I had
there was something about it in the book.
There was a little bit, but it was very unclear.
Yeah, they said something about the last name Levi or something. I think it was something like
that. I thought it was after he was born.
Who are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't remember. Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Alexander.
Alexander.
Hamilton. Anybody watch it on TV yet?
No.
Yes.
No.
Did you? Was it good?
It was great.
You know what? It was really good. It was really well done. I've watched some of the other like made for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Musicals, which most of them were not as good, but they did this on they took footage from two different nights of performances back in 2016.
Oh.
And then they also filmed a number of close-up like shots over and over, so they could like weave in, so they created they tried to create the experience of not just you being in the theater, and it was a lot of good big visual, but then you get some close-ups.
We've been watching it with the subtitles, which really helps because, you know, as much as we kind of had listened so many times to the lyrics, it just helped to have that cue right there.
There's a lot to hear. There's more words in Hamilton than in the longest Shakespeare play.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. I don't remember. It's one of the kings. I don't remember if it was King Lear, but yeah.
Wow.
I have the music on my phone, so a lot of times when I'm doing something I just want to shove, I just listen to the lyrics, so it's the more you listen, the more you understand how much was in there. And my neighbor had lent me the book of all, one of those thick books with all the lyrics of every single scene, which is...
Karen's got that. The biography was actually good, the Ron Chernow biography.
It took me 3 years to read it. Because I had the book and I couldn't carry it.
And you're a reader.
Yeah, because I couldn't carry it around, so it had to stay in one place. I bring it to work or something.
I have it on my Kindle.
It's a long book.
I'm not a big biography fan, but I liked that one. Okay. So always like nice to just chat and connect too. And you know, we're practicing together. So I will invite you to just, you know, get comfortable where you are if you're not already. So this week in our practice, I'm thinking about sitting patiently. So this week in Torah is a double portion. We're in a year of a number of double portions. We're going to finish the book of Numbers. Portion is Matot Maseh, double portion. And in chapter 33, toward the end of the book of Numbers, there's a passage where it might read a little like a travelogue, where the Israelites camp and then they go to the next place and they camp and they go to the next place and then they rest and they go to the next place. They travel and rest and travel and rest. And it happens 42 times. There's 42 places listed. And what's interesting is it doesn't just say like the Israelites, like the text could have said, the Israelites go from place to place. They traveled, they made 42 stops. Like there's so many ways that Torah could have given it to us. And yet each place is named. And not just named like they went here, and then they went here, and then they went here, and then they went here. But it says they come to a place and they camp. And then they leave, name the place, and go to name the next place where they rest. And then they rest in the next place and go to the next place. And so every place is named. And the travel, vayis'u, linsoa, nosea, to travel, vayachanu. So it's a really interesting, it's an interesting word. It's not the same word as minucha, though they're similar letters. So there's a similarity of like lanuach is to rest, but vayachanu, it's a reverse of those letters. But it also means it's to camp. A machane is a camp, so they camped. A chanaya in Hebrew is a parking lot, right, where you rest your car. But part of this chet nun hey, the opposite of root of resting, nun, is chen, which is also grace in Hebrew. So like the idea of this resting in each place, of where they stop in each place, I was thinking about is a little bit like sitting in God's presence and just being in that place like that. What would be another reason, right? That each place is named, like each place mattered. It wasn't just that they rested and traveled, but each place mattered. Repeating the name of the place as a destination for one leg and then the origin of the next leg of the journey. Like every place mattered. Every part of the journey was filled with its own meaning, its own time, its own purpose. So that made me think about the challenge that many of us may be experiencing of impatience, right, of what we're living through, of the pain and or the discomfort, the eagerness to speed to what's next, to looking to something that we believe is better, that is rosier. But this practice, what we're working with is to recognize that like, wow, that's what we really want. That's not how life works, right? When moments are painful, we want them to dissipate quickly. I do this, we all do this. And you know, even when things are going really well, think about moments when you've been really satisfied in life. likely still. There's a moment, like, flashes by, and then, like, there's the next to-do list of, like, the self-improvement or the things that would make life better or more efficient, or, like, we're always, our tendency is to always be thinking to some other better, different future time. And about what we're doing, right? Like this idea of sitting, of just sitting in the present. We can get caught and hooked on, like, why aren't I doing more? Why am I not being more productive? How much more can I accomplish, right? And that's a habit I work on breaking too. So how could, I thought this morning, how could we explore a little bit of what it would feel like to be, rather than to be always doing and plotting? So the first thing I'm going to invite us to do this morning is for a sitting moment. And the place that I would want us to start is just a little bit of loving kindness toward ourselves. We may be caring for other people. We may be worrying about other people. We may be holding off. We may be worrying about ourselves. And so I'm going to ask you to get comfortable. And I've done a number of different kinds of loving kindness meditations, and they come in all different traditions, not just Jewish. But how do we welcome a bit of loving kindness for ourselves? Because that is the first thing that we need to sit in being rather than doing. So notice where you are, where your body is in space, in the chair. Let your breathing happen. You can notice it happening. Notice the expansion of your ribs. And notice how that just happens. You don't have to make it happen. And so words of loving kindness toward ourselves. May I be peaceful, happy. May I be well. Peaceful is shalom. Joy and happiness, simcha. May I find myself free from harm and difficulties and problems. And when they arise, may I have patience and courage, understanding and determination to meet those challenges. May all living beings, timid, fearful, strong or confident, long or great or average, short or small or large, seen or unseen, living near or living far, may all beings be well and happy. May I be well and happy. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from fear. May I be free from grief. May God's light shine upon me, wrapping me in a shelter of love and peace. So the first thing to find ourselves being able to sit in the present moment is to be sure to be gracious, chen, to have chen for ourselves. A very simple meditation at any moment. This was a little bit longer, but to just something like, you know, may I be, the four qualities that my teacher Sheila Weinberg used to talk about in a very simple self-loving kindness meditation would be, may I be blessed with peace, shalom, may I be blessed with joy, with simcha, may I be blessed with chesed, with loving kindness, may I be blessed with rachamim, with compassion. And it's an easy, like, to just stop for a moment, and when you can turn that to yourself and sit in that moment for yourself, you can then offer that to others as well. And a lot of times that can really shift, like, where you are at any given moment, to come back into this present moment. Because a lot of our discomfort comes from living outside of the present, whether we're mired in the past or we're trying to get to out of the present because it's uncomfortable, or we're just anticipating something exciting in the future, and we're just trying to get out of being in the present. And when we can practice, like, being open to what is right now, it gives perspective to what was and what will be. So the first piece of what I would say about sitting patiently would be to just be sitting with oneself. The second is maybe kind of silly, but it is actually to just do less. Like, really just do less. There's a little story that talks of a man riding very fast on a horse. And as he rides past his friend standing on the side of the road, the friend yells after him, "Where are you going?" And the rider turned toward his friend and yells, "I don't know, ask the horse." There's a lot of things that drag us along, right? So the pace and intensity of our lives, which are, you know, of course, exacerbated by current levels of all kinds of external changes and unknowns, might leave many of us feeling like the person frantically riding that galloping horse, like we're just on there and we have no idea where we're going, and ask the horse, right? And, you know, that can be the result of anxiety, of the unknown, of too much time, of not enough, too much to do, not enough time, the pressure to produce, to tick off our to-do list, right? And that often decides the direction and quality of our existence, is that awful to-do list. But if we approach our days differently, we can consciously change that pattern. It requires a little bit of courage. It requires a little bit of courage, I think, to just do a little bit less, which I don't even think sounds easy. It's kind of hard, and it sounds hard, but you know what? Too often, it's about a mindset. We think of ourselves, we might mistakenly believe that doing less, how would you describe somebody who does less? What qualities would you talk about? How would you describe them? Somebody who does less.
Calm.
Calm, okay.
I would think of lazy.
Yep.
I would say not a type A.
Okay.
I'd say lazy and a procrastinator.
Okay. Right? So we tend to label like doing less is not being productive, is being lazy, is maybe being disorganized. So doing a little less, like obviously there are things we have to accomplish, but even if we approach them in a way that lets us be present to what we have to do, to what we are doing, to learn to maybe do a little less extraneously, like not everything has to be done, right? How can we engage in some different behaviors so we actually can craft some productivity that we can feel good about, not just something that we have to finish. So mindfulness and a practice and a noticing and cultivating an awareness helps us to think about and to notice like what's underlying each thing that we're rushing to do, that we're feeling pulled to do, like what's under that compulsion to do more, to always be connected, to make sure we get, we have this list and we get through it. Like what's going on for each of us? And it's different, right? For each of us, what's going on underneath that? How much of all the activity and the frenzy and the doing and the to-do lists are based on some version of fear, whether it's a fear of failure, of not living up, of missing out, of a fear of a sense of emptiness or aloneness, right? If we're constantly doing, then we're not having to be present to what might be underneath that. So how can we explore, like being curious, not judging ourselves, but just starting to look at what motivates us so that we can be more aware of our intentions and motivations, and therefore then we can choose what we actually do, not just let the horse ride. So I'm going to do it again. If you've shifted or need to shift or sort of notice where you are and allow your breathing to be. And what we're going to sit with for a couple of minutes is to just notice for yourself sort of this idea of doing, of the horse running, of the rushing that you might notice in your life. And are you doing more these days or less these days? And how have you been characterizing that for yourself? Have you noticed that you've been judging yourself one way or another? And through the course of a day, like what are the motivations for the things that you do? I want you to bring a little bit of curiosity, just sort of like looking over the last day, the last week, the last month, whatever you want, but sort of with a curiosity to what you are doing with your days. Okay, without judgment, sort of think about, just let that doing sense arise and notice for yourselves what is under that, what is happening for you, because it's different for everybody. But it's an attention and an awareness of starting to pay attention to why we're doing what we're doing. Okay, so we'll sit for a couple minutes. So to really, so to sit patiently in life, in Musar, the quality of patience, of savlanut, is the capacity to be present and bear what is in the present until the time is right to act. It actually has a similar root to like bearing suffering. You don't want to be suffering in the present, but there's a sense of bearing, like bearing a weight of being in this moment. So at first it's like just opening our hearts to ourselves and being compassionate and loving kindness, sharing loving kindness with ourselves. The next thing is trying to remove some of the things, some of the distractions, right? To recognize and to pay attention to like what we're doing and what do we really need to do, and what are the stories that we're telling ourselves about what we need to do, and to pay attention to that and be able to make those choices mindfully. The third step for me is to actually then shift from a consciousness of doing to being. I even like put a little hyphen in there, right? To really just to be in the present. So I call that sort of like ongoing ruminating state of mind, like the endless narrative, the stuff we have to do, like that's our doing mind, right? Doing. And we need that sometimes, right? The job of that part of our brain, of our soul, of our spirit, is to get things done. And there are things we have to get done in life. We want to achieve particular goals. Doing is especially good when those goals relate to our external world, like the things we do we make a meal, we build a house, we develop a vaccine, we repaint the front walkway, right? Like the strategy of achieving goals involves, in a sense, an internal thought process that continually monitors and evaluates our current situation against some model or standard, an idea of what is desired or required or expected or feared, right? Once this discernment or judgment is switched on our mind, looks for the mismatches between how things are and how we think they should be, right? That's its job. That's the doing mind. It like measures and it matches and it motivates and it reduces discrepancies and we get things done. And like, that's important at times. We don't want to starve. We're not going to live in mud. We pray for a vaccine. Like, we want people to do things. There's like the time and the right place to do things. And so a doing mode of the way we experience the world is really good for the right times. Right? There's nothing wrong with it. It works brilliantly as a strategy for solving problems, for achieving goals in the external world. Whether those goals are simply like buying all the items on our weekly shopping list or, you know, building housing for needy people. Like, we're doing things. The challenge comes that when we get wrapped up in that, without stepping back in awareness, to always be understanding ourselves, to recognize, to looking inside, we can actually lose touch with that inner compass, with the body awareness, with all the things that can help guide decisions. I haven't finished my coffee. Guide decisions skillfully, right? And so before long, we find ourselves doing out of habit, rather than conscious choice. We're stuck, we're propelling ourselves in the future, we're constantly, okay, the next thing, and we miss out on this, on the now. We miss out on the experience of the present. The other challenge with doing is when we don't use it in the right times, right? When we use the same doing mode, when things are not as we might want them to be in our personal inner landscape, in our feelings, in our thoughts, in the kind of person we see ourselves or want ourselves to be. And that's where the doing also can go wrong. Because if we dwell on the things that we want them to be and not as they are, we're gonna create more discrepancy, right? That sense of like what is and what could be. But when we do that for our inner lives, we're going to be constantly locked in a battle with ourselves, right? It doesn't resolve an internal experience by just brooding over it endlessly. right? That just keeps our state of mind that we're blocked off. And so if we take that processing, that measuring mind, that judging mind that I've talked about before, and just we keep going round and round on the discrepancies, on figuring out the ways to reduce the discrepancies of what we're feeling and what we want to be and what we expect ourselves to be inside, right? Dwelling on how we are not as we would wish to be just makes us feel worse. Doesn't actually get us anywhere. Like, it actually keeps us from being and feeling the person and the inner experience that we want. So for the inner life, for the inner landscape, we want to shift from doing to being, right? We're not relating to anything in the future, anything in the past, to ideas. Being is characterized by just being in this immediate, intimate experience of this moment right now. And it's not about, I've said this before, right? It's not about going and living on a mountaintop. It's not about shutting everything else out just so I can be right here, right? That's not it. Because doing and being can accompany both activity or lack of activity, right? Because it's a lot of it is about how our mind, how our spirit interacts with the world, with us and with the world around us, right? If we're washing the dishes, if we're doing the dishes with the aim of just finishing them as quickly as possible, getting onto the next activity before you're interrupted. And if you're interrupted, you get frustrated because your goal has been interrupted. Okay, not great, right? It's washing the dishes, but you could wash the dishes in a way that just says, okay, like, here I am washing the dishes. And if something interrupts it, like, that's just something that the present moment has arisen and something that will happen, and rather than as a source of frustration. So it's not about just shutting everything out, but even how we approach the to-do list. I think I've said this before, maybe I can't remember in this group, but some of you I'm sure have heard me say it, that multitasking is a fallacy. I mean, there are some tasks you can even do. It's not that you can't do multiple things at the same time, but likely you don't do any of them particularly well because your whole attention, even just on the physicality of what you're doing, isn't there, and your mind isn't there. And so we take away from ourselves the ability to actually be present to that, to just that moment. Like, maybe washing the dishes is not like the greatest thing in the world, but like, here we are, I'm standing at my sink and wow, I got running water. That's kind of pretty cool because not everybody has that. And that's not to make me feel bad that I have running water, right? But just like to be there, feel the water on your hands. I had a nice dinner, right? I'm getting the dishes in the dishwasher. Oh, it'll be nice when the kitchen's cleaned up. Oh, something else happened. All right, I'll get that. Like, just to be in that moment. And not just everything that we're constantly running to get to the next thing. And that's really important, especially now, because we're in places right now where on some level, like, we have fewer distractions, fewer external distractions, right? The classes we went to, the things where our kids were doing, the places we were going, the restaurants we were going to, like, we're not doing those things. And yet, which goes to my point of, it's not about the amount of activity you have, but what's going on up here. And yet I would venture to say that more of us are feeling, you know, more periods of anxiety or frustration or wanting to, you know, just when things get better, like all that stuff. We're feeling more of that now, even though we're doing less. So it's not just the amount of doing less, but the quality of attention that we bring to everything that we do. That's the sitting patiently in this moment, the going from, imagine the journey of the Israelites from place to place to place, but in each place, vayachanu, they rested. They sat in the grace of God's presence. And then that place took them to the next place, right? The name, they went from Sodom, and they traveled Vayisu to Meribah, and they camped in Meribah, and then they left Meribah and they went to Salem, Okay, so the place is named like multiple times because there's I believe it calls to remind us of this sense of mindful presence, of being in each moment. They're not simply like where you, the way station, like another blip along the line, but an opportunity. We could do it that way, right? But it could also be an opportunity to just be in each place and take from each moment what we can that will then bring us, help us travel to the next moment. So now we're gonna do a really funny little meditation to just be present to what, to this moment, a little practice. Because I want to explore how it feels to disengage a little bit from the busy mind and kind of shift into a being focusing on just one thing. And I know we've done lots of breathing and lots of practices, and sometimes we just like allow the distractions to arise, but I'm going to shift it a little bit differently. So I want you to take a couple of minutes while we're sitting here. You can close your eyes, open your eyes. Actually, close your eyes if you want. I'm going to ask you to think about your feet, but I don't want you to look at your feet. I want you to think about your feet without looking at them. And notice what thoughts come to mind when you think about your feet. Perhaps you have judgments about your feet. How much you like them, how much you dislike them. You may have thoughts about how you'd like them to be different. Perhaps places that your feet have taken you will come to mind, or problems your feet have caused you. There's no need to control your thoughts. Just let the thinking unfold. Take your time. Just a few minutes for those thoughts to arise about your feet. Bring your attention a little bit, just like down your legs into your feet. Feel them. Sense your feet without looking at them. Allow your awareness to sink into your feet, to fill them from the inside out, from the bones, right out to the surface of the skin. There are a lot of bones in your feet. You can notice sensations you feel on the skin, on the soles of your feet. Touch or pressure, where the feet make contact with the floor. Or your shoe. And if you can, if you're able, clench your toes. Tight as you can, but more to notice the sensations in your toes and the soles of your feet, pressure that you might feel or tightness, and just the coming and going of sensations throughout the feet and I'm sure into the ankles and legs. And then you can relax them. Again, noting, being aware of the changes in sensations in the feet and your toes as they relax. You can do that a couple more times. And we are sitting here just with what is. Your feet, your body, your breath. Your breath, your nishima, and your soul, your nishama. Any thoughts or questions or comments or reactions?
The more I do this, the more it feels good and I can let go more and more, which I like.
I found it helpful to do when I was in the hospital and really not feeling well.
Wow. I can help you think about some other practices too, if you want. Being with pain is hard.
I think that the last exercise was the first time I really turned off the outside world and was not distracted during this session. Maybe starting to do some work and reading my email and the five messages I got about people that want to do things, it took me that long just to sort of wash it off of me, because I found my mind was otherwise just turning. And I finally got there and caught up with you.
I have just recently got more diagnosed that I have more arthritis in my right foot, and it makes you conscious of how well the body works when it does work. And I took my tennis shoes off and just had socks on and clenched my toes. And, you know, I could feel where the pain is in my right foot on the top part. And that's partly something I may have to live with. But makes you feel conscious for the good parts of your body that does work and how well our bodies do work to make us be able to walk and do all the functions that we need to do, from breathing to getting around mobility-wise.
Yeah. Karen, were you going to say something?
I love the part about the feet, the whole story about that. But I just, from the beginning, tried to make a resolution. Or I'm just curious as to how I would be if I tried for a few days to absolutely not have a to-do list. I think that would be the first time that I remember not having a to-do list. And I feel like I'm genetically programmed to just have to cross things off a list. And it even extends to something that's not on my list, which is going out and walking every day. And for some reason, I've put on map my walk or map my run. And so like that has to be something to accomplish a certain distance. So it would just be very freeing. I don't know how I would really react to that. And I'm gonna give it a try.
Maybe the first thing is to get rid of the to-do list, but to look at it, to like sit with it, discern what's on there. Why things are on there, kind of look at the motivations behind your to-do list, and then perhaps just shorten it or shift things so it's not as many things every day. I'm not sure if we, I mean, maybe we can get rid of to-do lists and different people, but like that's where I would start. Trying to get rid of a to-do list is probably a really big leap, but being attentive to it, mindful as to why, what's on there, and trying to do one thing at a time, and perhaps even, you know, getting through what you get through and being just present to that. And then the rest of it goes to the next day. Like some of it is just a shifting of being, right? It's not a lack of activity, but also just a being present, right? The Israelites didn't just sit there. They moved, but what I'm drawing out of this list, there's lots of commentaries that draw all kinds of things out of the list of names of places, but for this purpose, I just love the idea of like the encampment had this sense of sitting in God, for me, has this sense of sitting in God's presence, of chen, of being in chen. And so if we rush through that, we miss that. So let's not rush through being in God's presence. May you experience the blessings of God's presence, of love, of family in the days ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Good to see you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Have a good
day. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Have a good morning.